thanks for tuning in to the Undercuts review of the 2024 Dutch Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and enjoy the show.
By being a racing driver, you are under risk all the time. By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver.
All right, guys. So we are back from the summer break. And the first race is Max's home race, the Dutch Grand Prix, or is it the Netherlands Grand Prix? I feel like it's the Dutch Grand Prix.
It's the Dutch Grand Prix, they call it. Well, that's what we call it. Grand Prix of the Netherlands. I think it's just the Dutch Grand Prix. I don't know. I can look on the F1 app to see what it actually says.
Yeah, to do that. But one of the craziest looking tracks, it's like a roller coaster almost, with all the banking and right next to the ocean, and there's always like sand blowing onto the track, which always potentially causes some kind of, you know, slip up to happen. But a beautiful track.
Yes, it is the Formula One Heineken Dutch Grand Prix.
There we go. Nice.
It's a cool track because it's just really twisty. They've got the banking and it's just through the sand dunes. I don't know if I'd want to go to this race or not, because the atmosphere looks great. You're right there by the sea. Granted, it's the North Sea. It's hardly the Indian Ocean.
Right.
But so it looks like it's kind of cool. And you get 72 laps as well. So I always say to folks, if they want to go to a Grand Prix, don't go to Spa, because the cars only go by like 40 times.
Yeah.
You want to go somewhere like Zandvoort or Montreal, where they come by way more.
Yeah.
But if they're going all through the dunes, it's like, do you ever really get to see the cars other than for a tiny fraction of the lap where, you know, I don't know. We'll have to do some research. But it does look a fun one to go to. It looks like a good atmosphere.
At least if you're sitting at like that turn one hairpin
Tarzan,
that would probably be a pretty good place to sit if you're going to that race.
I love that corner is called Tarzan.
Why is it called Tarzan?
I have no idea. It just is,
just because.
I mean,
why not?
Was Tarzan Dutch? I don't know
what jungle he was from either.
I'll have to watch the Disney movie.
Great music. Shout out to Phil Collins. So I guess there was some news coming into the week to the race weekend from the summer break. Obviously, Carlos Sainz officially going to Williams, which has been kind of rumored off and on since the beginning of the season, but there are always inklings of him going to Red Bull or Alpine or whatever, but he's going to Williams, and they have a crazy lineup next year.
Yeah, it's a great pairing of Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz, which for a team where they currently are is a bounty of riches, really, because, you know, two really, really good drivers. But, you know, it was kind of the least worst option for Carlos, really, because Red Bull clearly didn't want him because they didn't want to upset the apple cart with Max. And then Mercedes have they formally announced it now that Andrea Kimi Antonelli is going to be coming in?
It's been official yet, but it's seeming more and more likely.
Yeah, and so it was really a choice between Audi or Sauber, who were in real disarray with, you know, they've canned Andreas Seidel.
Yeah,
not sure when that fell relative to the start of the summer break, but, you know, so full change of management. And similarly, full change of management at Alpine as well, with Ollie Oakes coming in, Bruno Famin going out.
Yeah.
It was kind of amusing that, I don't know, do you listen to Beyond the Grid podcast?
I haven't been up to date with it.
I'm certainly not up to date with it, but the week, so I think the week that they canned Bruno Famin, it was like, the news came out on like a Thursday or something. And the day before that, they released Beyond the Grid of 1 year in charge.
Oh my God.
Like Bruno Famin, which is great timing.
Yeah,
and,
right.
But yeah, so, I mean, obviously they're in like all sorts of disarray, So really, I mean, Williams are a solid foundation. They got a good leader in James. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer in the end. I think with all the stuff that's going on with Alpine as well, looking to shut down their engine program seemingly and start buying Mercedes engines. So also Ollie Oakes, not wanting to kind of start sprinkling any sort of theories in here, but when you looked at when the FIA opened up the bidding to have new teams, the two teams that applied were Andretti and Hi-Tech. Ollie Oakes is the team boss of Hi-Tech.
Right. And they're in F2 team, right?
They're in F2 and in F3.
In F3, yeah.
So you kind of look at that and go, well, are Hi-Tech just going to buy Alpine?
Huh. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's...
It's a theory.
Seems more likely if Renault is completely dropping their...
Yeah.
Part of the sport with their engines, what's the point of, you know, shelling more money into it if none of the car is yours?
Yeah, and the Hi-Tech want to be in it, and they wanted to have a new team from scratch. So maybe Alpine just wanted to get out, and they wanted to get in.
Yeah,
maybe we'll see how it goes. But it's a little bit ironic. Well, ironic. Well, anyway, the point is, Ollie Oakes is now the team principal of Alpine, whilst also simultaneously, I think, still being the boss of Hi-Tech in F1 and F3.
Interesting. Well, I like that theory. I mean, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, but staying with, you know, hopping back to the driver front, the last bit of news just coming in to the Dutch Grand Prix weekend in terms of Alpine was the announcement that Jack Doohan will be in the seat alongside Pierre next year. So that's one more seat off the table.
Yeah, that's cool. I like him. He seems like a pretty cool guy, and he's been doing a lot of the talk shows around, you know, like the F1 TV shows, intro and outro talk shows.
Yeah.
He's been doing that a lot, getting his face out there. Oscar kind of did that a little bit while he was at Alpine too. They do a good job of like putting the face out there, but hopefully he can do well.
Yeah, I mean, it gets the name recognition. So when he gets the seat, you know, I guess it's also from his perspective, if he's a known name by people in F1 circles, you know, then it stands him in good stead. So, you know, hopefully he does well. You know, is he going to be the next Oscar? Maybe not. Is he going to be better than Joe and Logan Sargeant? Hopefully.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah, I mean, good to give, you know, someone new gets a shot, some new blood into the sport. We'll just got to now see how Liam Lawson can fit into all of this.
Yeah, right.
And get him the seat that he deserves.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last of the rumors is it seems to be like a carousel of all the teams linked with Adrian Newey on where he's going. And now Aston Martin seems to be the front runner. I mean, how many teams has he been linked to since the news dropped that he's
going? It was really two. I mean, it would have been nice to have Williams in there with a shot. I'd love to have seen him go to Williams, but I don't think that was ever really on the cards. It was really between Aston Martin and Ferrari, Fernando or Lewis. And I always sort of had that inkling that Adrian knew he didn't want to move to Italy.
Yeah.
You know, so he gets to stay in his enormous estate and then commute up to Silverstone, like literally right across the street from Silverstone Circuit.
Very nice. Well, that would be great if that ends up turning out that way and they can turn it around again, just like they did last year, just a little bit higher. But
They've just got to learn how to develop a car during the course of the season.
Right.
You know, when you look at what McLaren's doing with the upgrades that they've been bringing in, everything that they put on the car makes the car better. You know, Red Bull have had a similar issue as well. They put a new, you know, I think Max was running the floor from Bahrain this weekend because everything that they've done to, you know, try and make it better hasn't happened. You know, similarly, you know, Aston, I'm not sure if they've got is their wind tunnel even starting yet? I don't know. They're in the new facility, but I'm not sure if the wind tunnel's online yet. But whatever they're doing, they're not getting that correlation between the wind tunnel and the track. And so they're you know, if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards, yeah. as Martin says.
Yes. Especially this year, it seems evident that way. But admittedly, I wasn't able to watch all the practices live, which is crazy. I usually am able to, but what the biggest news out of the whole weekend or out of the practices was in FP3 when it was pouring rain, Logan having a huge crash, which made it so he wasn't able to get out for the qualifying session. But glad he's all right, but really just putting more fuel to the flames with Logan's exit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they want to be building the new parts, not kind of having to build all the old parts to repair all the damage. My buddy George would be extremely busy. He's the guy that kind of tells them what they need to make back at the factory to replace the bits that they've had to tear off the car and replace.
It's a lot of bits.
Yeah, he's been a very busy man this year with it's funny because, you know, the GOAT left, you know, a couple of seasons ago, and we thought, well, maybe that'll save some money in crashes, but I don't know. Wow. He's just getting, yeah, exactly, that's right. I was trying to look for words and what was about. Yeah, that's kind of it, right?
Yeah.
I didn't actually see it until race day. So I didn't see it before quali or anything like that. I just heard about it and knew that he wasn't participating in qualifying, but I didn't see anything until the pre-race show on Sunday. And that was a bit of a shunt.
Yeah.
He had felt that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But they got the car ready for the race, which is huge deal. I mean, because I don't know what the deal is with, because normally it's like 6 p.m. or something that on Saturday night, the car's going to lockdown. I don't know if that's the same if you've got damage and you can repair the car back to the original spec, but you can't change anything about the car after 6 p.m. But I think if you've got scrutineers, maybe you can do a little bit more. I don't exactly know. But they pulled out all the stops and got the car ready for the race. And so good on them.
Yeah. I mean, they had the whole qualifying session in order to do work on it too, because they did not participate.
Yeah.
But yep, so that is it for the practices. So in qualifying, I guess I should say that coming into qualifying, the Mercedes were looking really fast. Obviously, the McLarens were looking really fast, but the Red Bull looked a step down and the Ferraris looked a step down. But we, like I said, it was raining all of FP3 and before qualifying. So it's yet again another drying track qualifying, which we've seen.
Were any of the practice sessions dry? Or was qualifying the first dry running they actually did?
Well, I think they were. Because they were able to get on some dry tires during earlier practice sessions, but I think that there was at least rain in part of all of the sessions.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that they were able to, in both FP1 and FP2, able to do some dry tire runs. So they were at least able to try out the tires a bit. Lewis, who is looking really fast during the weekend, like I said, was not able to get out of Q2. And Carlos also was not able to get out of Q2. So a big surprise from the Mercedes, obviously still a surprise from the Ferrari, but they were still looking a step down, but not that far down.
Yeah.
Lewis
got three spot penalty as well. So not only did he qualify in 12th,
yeah,
he got bumped back a couple of spots, you know, to three spots, which, I mean, what else was he supposed to do? Checo just got timid and just didn't go by.
Yeah. I mean, it was unfortunate timing. Yeah. It was just like really bad timing where it happened to shake out, but I don't feel like that should be Lewis's fault that the timing was bad. I don't know,
because he was way up on the outside.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a Lewis fan. That,
me too.
But it's so I will defend him. But but where else was he supposed to go? What else was he supposed to do?
He slowed right drive down. Off. Yeah, it was either drive off the track or completely stop.
Yeah. But Checo's lap was impeded out of the situation, despite the fact that when you watched it back from in car, in Checo's on board, Lewis was way out of the way and he could have just gone straight through.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see other drivers just straight through. So
yeah. Well, of course, he's just been having such a awful time of it. Every single little moment that doesn't go his way is going to be frustrating for him, right?
Yeah. But yeah.
At least he was able to get out of Q2, which he's been struggling to do all year. So that's a highlight for him. But with Lewis and Carlos not making it out of Q2, Albon and Pierre were able to get into Q3. Really great from those guys. Not really expecting that from them, but really well done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's it. Whenever you get a couple of guys who underperform in qualifying, it gives the opportunity for a couple of midfield cars to sneak into the top 10. Albon ultimately finishing P8 in Q3. Unfortunately, what was it? The floor was 3 millimeters too wide?
Yes.
How does that happen?
I don't know how that's even possible. Like, you would think they would measure that before they put it on the car, right?
Well, you'd think they'd measure it when they built it.
Yeah. Like, how do they have one that's not to the regulations? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And then, but also, if you got all the parts, I don't know. I've never heard that one before. Someone's in trouble, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, the closest thing that I can think of during my time watching the sport was when they got Lewis for having like the rear wing open too much, but this is crazy.
Yeah, but it's the technical regs, it's not the sporting regs, so it's instant disqualification from the session.
Right.
Right. So so he had to start at the back.
Yeah.
You know, just like with at Spa, right? George is underweight. It's not the sporting regs, it's the technical regs. If the car's not in technical compliance, then it's disqualified.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair. I'm sure Mark is thrilled with it, the rule follower of the bunch of us. But yeah, I mean, the rules are the rules, I guess. And very disappointing for Albon. But a great session for Lando, who took pole by a really, really long way.
Like 3.5 tenths, right? I mean, it was
crazy.
It was a good lap.
Yeah, absolutely. Max right next to him on the front row, and Oscar and George taking up the second row. I mean, P5 is like an incredible qualifying spot for Checo these days. He hasn't been that far up in a really long time.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the gap was between him and Verstappen, but he's only three spots behind his teammate, which is a narrower gap than he's had for a good long while. So maybe it gives him an opportunity to do something in the race.
But yeah, like we said, Albon got disqualified, so he lost his P8. Starting spot, Lewis got the 3-spot grid penalty, but only ended up dropping 2 spots because Albon, I guess, right? Because Albon got disqualified, so he moved back up a spot after the 3-spot penalty. Because he ended up starting in P14 instead of P12. Then Kevin started from the pit lane. They were changing something to do with
his battery, engine. I think it was battery.
Battery.
Yeah.
They said during the pre-race broadcast that the last 7 race winners did not start on pole for those races. Which you don't see that often. Usually pole is usually like 50% of the time they win the race, right?
Yeah, it definitely seems as not as important as it once was.
Yeah.
And especially when you think that it's not Max just blowing by everyone. Like, you know, like last season, you'd get Charles putting it on pole, or, you know, Lando put it on pole one time, maybe, or maybe not. I can't remember. But then that would be because Max didn't quite have it, or the Ferrari always went backwards in the race last year because it just chewed through its tires, but it was still getting quali.
Continue the conversation on pine-sports.com. That's pine-sports.com. And the Pine Sports Discord, which you can find linked on the website. And join us in a one-of-a-kind fantasy Formula One contest at coopsf1.com. That's COOPSF1.com, where you can put your theories to the test.
And that is really, really it for the pre-race stuff. Pretty much everybody started on medium tires except for Lewis, who started on soft tires, as well as Yuki and Bottas, and Kevin from the pit lane started on hard tires going long. But Lewis really the first of the guys near the top, although I guess he was in P14, so he wasn't really near the top, but one of the top runners at least, to start on soft tires and try and move up quickly and make up the ground that he lost for poor qualifying. And then the race started, and yet again, you know, I was thinking he would at least work on this during the summer break. His starts have been not good, and Lando again has not a very good start, and Max is well ahead of him by the time they get to turn one.
And it's not a long run down to the first corner at Zandvoort. It's a pretty short run. And yeah, I think just that second phase of the start, he just got wheel spin.
Yeah.
I think. And that was that. And
Oscar got it too, though. It was very weird.
Okay. I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Because George.
Engine mode thing.
Yeah. George got right by him. They both lost a spot going into turn one. So yeah. Really weird. But no crashes on turn one. Everyone was safe. And other than really those guys, everything stayed pretty similar. At the end of the next lap, though, Lewis had a great pass going around the outside of turn one. I love how the banking makes the passing look on this track. It's just so cool. I feel like you never see anyone around the outside of turns like this able to pass, but it just works here better than anywhere else.
It just changes up the line and gives them an opportunity to take multiple lines, which is
great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can stick it on the outside, which I think Pierre did around the first corner on lap one off the start. He picked up a couple of spots.
Yeah. He had a great start.
A good start there.
Yeah. I mean, he had made it up to seventh place by, I guess, the fourth lap. So making up two or three spots on the first few laps. Really, really good from him. Max has a 1.3 second gap at turn or at lap three. And it looks like he's gaining a bit, but Lando's able to kind of keep it in that same zone for a little bit around 1.3, 1.6, like fluctuating from there. But Max holding steady for the start. We saw some really great side-by-side racing through a bunch of banked turns with Carlos and Pierre. Pierre trying to get by Carlos, but Carlos in the end holding it around the outside again and able to keep his spot in P7. But really great racing between those two. Lap 12. Lando still has the same lead, but he's starting to gain a little bit. And then on lap 14, Lando does have DRS, and he goes to make a lunge at Max on lap one, but he's not able to make it stick, but he's able to stay fairly close to Max for pretty much all of that lap, and he's really lining up for the next lap, or the next couple laps.
Yeah, I mean, it's normally we've seen Max get ahead, and Max just disappear into the distance and be, you know, half a second a lap clear and just kind of, you know, run away, sit there and wait for everyone else to pit and keep going. That's not the case now. The McLaren is the faster car, and it was really just a case of looking after the tires, waiting for the Red Bull's tires to start dropping off, which ran about lap 16, 17. Yep. Sure enough, there's Max coming on and saying that, you know, the tires are just not holding up. And that gives then Lando the opportunity to use his tire advantage and just go by.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think he said his tires were numb, which I'd never heard any driver use before, but I guess he's just saying you can't really feel them, right? They're just, yeah. he doesn't have any grip. So, yeah, Lando was able to, in the end, pass him easily before they got to turn one, having to go around the outside. Max tried to cut in the inside a bit, but I mean, Lando had it covered. It was easy.
Yeah. And Max didn't, he kind of had a bit of a go at defending, but it definitely didn't feel like the Max with his elbows out, robust defense of a position that we were maybe expecting.
Yeah.
And I think that was really a case that Max knew that maybe he didn't have the quickest car today and it was just going to be, you know,
yeah,
prolonging the inevitable. That's not very like Max. So I don't, you know, it doesn't really compute that he let Lando through quite that easily. But yeah. It was a good, clean move in coming out the last corner, right up behind, going straight into the, you know, down into the straight. It was really obvious that there was just going to be a great opportunity for Lando to get by with the DRS.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure he's not thinking about this in the moment, but maybe somebody talked to him and is just like, look, the only way Lando can ever try and catch you in this championship is if you crash out and he scores points. So don't do anything stupid in these kind of instances, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I doubt that he's thinking about that.
It's a 7.8 points per race difference to win the title at the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's like basically if Max finishes second in every race and gets a few fastest laps along the way, then Lando could win them all.
Yeah.
And he'll still win it. So,
yeah.
Interesting thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Let's see. And then just a couple laps after Lando passes Max, he is over a second ahead and pulling away fairly easily. Max just is not able to keep that DRS, and away goes Lando. A couple laps after that, Charles has DRS on Oscar. He had it for a really long time and just was not able to really get a move on him. Oscar was just placing it well and getting better exits, keeping the outside line. So Charles wasn't able to get that, that good exit going out of the corners. Lewis was making up really great ground on starting on the soft tires. He had gone all the way up to P9 after starting on P14. So making up five spots, but of course he is the first to pit, being the only guy on softs up there, so he drops back.
Yeah. There had been a flurry of pit stops early as well, like Alex pitted on maybe on lap 16 or so,
yeah,
which was a little aggressive because at that point obviously there's too far left for it to be a one stopper. So I was a little surprised that he pitted, and there was, I think, Bottas and a couple of others pitted as well, but nothing really that would shift things at the front.
Yeah, no. Let's see, lap 25, Lando's now 4 seconds ahead, looking good. So Charles,
yeah, that's half a second a lap, right? Just the half a second that Max used to pull away when he was in the lead.
Exactly.
Now it's Lando half a second a lap.
He's probably like, oh, that's what it looks like, watching him pull away. But yeah, Charles still not able to get ahead, so he ends up coming into to pit on lap 25. He ends up between the Astons, who have not pit yet, in P9. Let's see, then George responds to make sure he doesn't get undercut by George, but I feel like he does end up getting, no, maybe not, he still was, or maybe he was ahead at that point, I don't remember. Let's see. So, geez, Max on lap 28 now is 7 seconds behind. So he just comes in for his pit stop. He's not catching him, and hopefully he'll be able to make up some time on the undercut. But Lando responds, has a kind of a slow stop. It was like 3.1 seconds, so not awful, but he did lose a couple seconds. And let's see, Charles with DRS is able to get by Pierre and up into P6, but I think Pierre was also still out at this point. Let's see, and now everyone really starts pitting. Checo comes into pit, and he has a slow stop, 4.5 seconds. Lewis is already almost back up into the points, into P11 with some guys ahead of him who haven't pit yet. So Lewis really, you know, making up good ground with a bad starting spot, doing a really good job, showing it did have pace, even though they weren't able to really utilize it during qualifying. Let's see, and then Carlos pits, and I guess at this point of the front runners, Oscar was the only one who had not pit yet, and he was putting in good laps up at the front for a while, but his teammate got the fastest lap and was pulling away from Max again.
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely going for the having the freshest tires at the end and trying to pick up trying to pick off the cars in front, because it was, you know, Charles was trying to pass him and Charles pit on lap 25. So it's 9 laps later that Oscar comes in. Obviously, Charles has managed to go, you know, up the road a little bit. And, but that kind of puts Oscar with a lot to do, but with fresher tires towards the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's George between Charles and Oscar, because Charles undercut George at the at the pit stop.
Yeah, that's right.
But by this point, Lewis was eighth.
Yeah, really, really impressive from him. And I guess everybody went on to hard tires for their second stint. I don't think anyone else did anything other than that. And I think Kevin is the only one that has not pit at this point. I think he was sitting in P9 or 10, but he would obviously drop back. Oscar, who had come in on lap 34, took the fastest lap on lap 40 as he was passing George around turn one, sitting P4 and going to chase down Charles. I mean, was it the last race right before the break where Oscar had a similar situation to this, where he was chasing down someone on newer tires towards the end of the race, or am I just...
It feels like a bit of a McLaren strategy of just having stronger tires at the end. Just like you look back at Emilia Romagna when Lando was hunting down Max and give it another couple of laps and he might have got it done. I don't know. It feels like they're giving up the undercut and losing track position to then try and get it back at the end when all they need to do is pit a lap before the guy that was going to undercut them. Yeah. And then they're the ones with the tires and they hold off at the end, knowing how good they are on their tires. So they should be able to preserve any lead that they have. Yeah. So it seems a little bit of a weird, maybe they're overthinking it. I don't know, but it just seems a bit of an odd. Yeah. They're just trying to make it interesting, right?
Yeah. Right. I wish they wouldn't. I wish they would just be smarter and come in the lap before the guy that they're trying to beat. But yeah, and then we see a pretty crazy moment where 5 cars were going into turn one at one time. I think it was Kevin was the one in the lead who still had not pit. And he's got 4 cars flying around him down the straight as they go into turn one. I think Pierre is the one that ended up winning out of those 5, but pretty crazy. I'm shocked that there was... nobody touched each other in that instance, which was very, very good. Let's see. Carlos is trying to pass Checo, but Checo slams the door shut on him, and it looked like they got pretty close, but they, I don't think they touched. I didn't see any angle where we saw them touch. And Checo was able to stay ahead of him. And let's see. Now McLaren has over a 12-second lead on Max. So pretty much it's looking like either a safety car or, you know, him crashing is the only way that he's
going rain, to rain or a safety rain. Car would be the only thing that could change things at this point.
You'd think after Sochi, they would have, I feel like Lando would be the first one to come in now after, after what happened at Sochi, but Carlos finally able to pass Checo and up into P6 on the next lap. And then Lewis, it looks like he does drop down or a few guys go by him when he pits for his second stop, but he's got a free stop to his teammate, I believe, or I guess that's what George did. That's what George did. But Lewis had a free stop. So he comes in for, they had another set of fresh soft tires. So I guess might as well use them, right? Trying to make but, this time.
Yeah, George must be a little frustrated because he was running third for a good chunk of this race. And then it doesn't pit like too early. I guess he pits the same time as Charles, right? Like 25, 26. So what's the deal with coming in for new tires and giving up track position? I couldn't figure it out. It was getting late. I was admittedly quite tired by this point.
Yeah.
But I just look at his race. I was like, how did he,
you know, he messed that up?
How did he move back so far? I mean,
yeah.
It was just a little odd from Mercedes in terms of a strategy call to bring them both back in at the end. But if Lewis comes in and he's got a free stop.
Either. They weren't fresh soft tires either. Yeah. They were used soft tires. Really weird.
Yeah. I mean, I get Lewis because he's got a free stop and they want to bring him out and try and get that fastest lap. So
yeah,
you can do that in that case. But then George is a bit different.
Yeah. Very odd. And Lewis only pit two laps before him off of the soft tires. So, I mean, if he had already stayed out, he might as well, I don't know. Very weird. Very weird from them. I'm sure he was not happy about that. And then we really didn't get anything else after that. I mean, lap 65 out of 72, Oscar is within DRS range of Charles, but he's not able to make anything happen, and Charles is able to get out of DRS again, and Lando ends up winning the race with over a 20-second lead for the second one of his career and of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, with Oscar coming up, like, having 6-7 laps with DRS, a 9-lap younger tires and couldn't get it done in a McLaren that was the fastest car out there in the hands of Lando. I don't know. It seems kind of odd.
It really does.
He couldn't make it. Of course, it's Charles, so he's obviously very, very good. And Charles was definitely downplaying any chances that the Ferrari had this weekend, and coming away with the podium is a real result for them. So it was a great weekend for Charles, but somewhat of a missed opportunity for Oscar and for George, really. Shout out to Carlos, making it up to fifth spot from, where did he start? 11th?
11th, yeah.
Really good race from him. So the Ferraris did really, really well. I guess all the wet running, they weren't really sure what they had, and they ended up having a really good car.
Yeah. Yeah, really impressive from them. Obviously, you got to put Lando and McLaren as winners on the weekend. I mean, obviously, I'm sure Oscar is disappointed that he wasn't able to get up on the podium, but continually making strides in the Constructors' Championship, which, I mean, it's got to be in play now, right?
I haven't looked
at the actual points spread.
It's 30-something points now?
30 points, exactly. Crazy.
Yeah.
So definitely in play. There's a fight there, and, I mean, it's still, like we said before, a huge stretch, and things would have to go really well for Lando, but only a 70-point gap with, I don't know, a little less than 10 races left, right?
Yeah, I mean, all it takes is a mechanical problem for Max.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to stack it. He's not going to bin it into the wall. Like fuel pickup issue, like they had at the start of a couple of seasons ago, or just a little gremlin that kind of takes him out of the race, that would make it very interesting indeed. I think it's still, the ball is still very much in Max's court, yeah. like I said earlier, if Max comes second every race, then it's kind of who can get the most fastest laps that'll determine it. But still, 70 points is quite a lead to take into the last. Were there 9 races left or 10 races left?
I think it's 9. I think you're right. And Lando was able to take the fastest lap on the very last lap of the race on, I don't even know how many old tires they were, 45 lap tires, taking the fastest lap of the race.
Yeah. Because Lewis had it before that, right? I think Lewis picked up the fastest lap after coming in.
After pitting, yeah.
On like 49. And
so he had fresh soft tires.
And Lando's had 40 lap old hards on, and I think it was like 67,000ths of a second or something. So
wow, yeah, super impressive from him. I mean, like you said, Charles definitely a winner. Ferrari, they're definitely a winner. I mean, it's been a down few races since really Monaco, right? Since Charles took the win at Monaco, it's been largely disappointing for them.
Yeah, it was odd. Everyone thought that they were going to be in the ascendancy, and then it just fizzled out.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of winners on the day, definitely Ferrari.
Yeah.
Losers on the day, Mercedes. They've won what, 3 of the 4 races running, you know, going into this.
Yeah.
So to see them apparently looking quite quick on Friday.
Absolutely.
Saturday. To just end up in, what were they, 8th and 7th and 8th?
Yeah.
It just feels like, it feels disappointing that they were the third fastest car.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, George moved down. Lewis had a fairly decent race. I mean, of course, he doesn't want to start in P14, but getting up to where he did was impressive, but still not a good points haul for them this weekend. And Pierre is a winner on the day. I mean, where did he end up on Tuesday? P9 on the day.
P9, yeah.
Moving them a little bit farther ahead of Williams in the...
Yeah, especially on a day when Ocon was just nowhere.
Yeah.
He just couldn't get anything done. The car was not there for him.
Yeah, not at all.
Big winner for me, though, Carlos. You know, here's the guy who, granted, he didn't, he's a couple of spots behind Charles, but he started 11th.
Yeah.
And he made it up to 5th. So that's, the same number of pickups of spots as Lewis, I guess. Yep. So those two really doing a great job.
Yeah. I mean, Albon had a couple times during the weekend where it looked like he would definitely be a winner on the weekend, but in the end he's a loser, right? I mean, just not a good weekend for him. It's obviously not his fault that the car was 3 millimeters too wide, but they were looking pretty optimistic on the weekend and they were not able to capitalize, so pretty disappointing for them.
Yeah.
Max and Red Bull, losers, just losing in every championship at the moment, whether it's out of reach now or not, we don't know. But really disappointing for them.
I mean, the understeer on that car, I've seen, flipping through Twitter, what we've scored now.
X.
There's a lot of clips of just showing the amount of understeer he was getting. So, yeah, that car's not what it should be.
No.
I mean, he's still coming second. So, I mean, it's not the end of the world. But when you're expecting him to be at the front and really challenging for the win, granted, he got off the line first and did all he could, but his car just ultimately was not fast enough to keep up.
No. And I think that's 5 races in a row that he's not won, which is crazy to think about how it's been the past 3 seasons.
Especially when you look at the first 6 races of the year. Didn't he win the first 6?
He won first 6.
Five of the first 6, because Carlos won in Australia.
Yeah.
And
almost all the races last year.
Yeah. But it's great to see new winners. You know, Lando now, that's his second win.
Yes.
So he's the third, well, the second non-Red Bull driver to win two races.
Yeah. That's great. And let me pull Coops up because I haven't even looked.
I didn't even look. I probably did not do particularly well.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough one to call. It looks like somebody got 305 points. Danny Rick's fangirls got 305 points on the weekend, which is really impressive. Got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the drivers in their exact spots. So yeah, that was really impressive. I moved up to 70th place with 225 points. Let's see where everybody else is. I think Mark is still in he moved down one spot to P4. But the 2, 3, and 4 are all separated by 2 points. So, or no, never mind. They're not. 12 points.
I got 200 points, which is
nice.
A reasonable points haul.
Yeah.
I'm up to 55th.
All right. I'm catching you. Only 15 spots back of you now. But Ma Cooper is still ahead of me by 2 spots. And let's see. Oh, Martin. Oh, he moved up 6 spots, but he's up into 120th place. So
there you go.
Yeah.
He would tell us where the bots came, but we'll not kind of have everyone hang on the line while we try and figure out what that is.
Right. Yeah.
But for anyone who doesn't do Coops F1, coopsf1.com.
Yeah. You should.
You know, it's most of the way through the season, so you won't be in contention to win anything, but there's still all to play for if you sign up with your friends and join at the same time.
You can make your own mini league. Yeah, definitely worth checking it out. It's super easy. You just pick who you think's going to place where.
It's totally free.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just done for fun.
Yeah.
You won't win anything other than bragging rights amongst your mates.
Unless you figure something out for yourselves, but don't tell us about it. And what's next? Monza.
Monza this coming weekend, right?
It's
back to backs. So, yeah, we've got Monza coming up. Very different track to Zandvoort.
Very.
You know, the fastest track on the calendar, lowest downforce configuration. So, it should be a different ask of the cars. It was one that in the past, my boys at Williams would be particularly good at. They had a slippery car, but that was useless everywhere else.
Right.
So they always did pretty well here. But, you know, you look back to Spa, maybe is a bit of a proxy because, again, it's kind of a long lap with long straights. Mercedes, obviously, were looking good there. So are they going to be pretty strong? Ferrari are always strong at Monza. They always want to be as close to the front as they can. So they typically have a special Monza spec car.
Yeah.
So that you know, because it's the most important race for them as the team of Italy to go to Monza and in front of the Tifosi, and the Monza podium is the best podium of the year.
Yeah, it's great.
It juts out above the track, and you got thousands of fans underneath with their flags and all sorts of stuff. So if you're watching the race on Sunday, don't turn it off when they cross the finish line. Really stay on and watch the podium ceremony. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. I always visualize Charles when he won at Monza and how crazy it was having a Ferrari driver winning the race at Monza and how crazy it was there.
So with that, then my money is going to be on Carlos to win Monza.
I like
that. That would be the story, wouldn't it?
Well, he only lost by 11 seconds last year. He was on the podium. So maybe it will happen. But it was Max and Checo 1-2 last year at Monza. So cool. Oh, right. One more thing. What did you think about the like gyro cameras that they had for the when they were doing all the banking? It was kind of weird. It was a little disorienting.
I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool too.
Martin Brundle was saying, but it doesn't look like that when you're driving the car. It's like,
so what?
But that's not the point.
Yeah.
The whole point of it is to show how crazy the banking is.
Yeah.
Which it is. And it's very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, because if you want to see what it really looks like, then they have the cameras in people's helmets now. Yeah. So that's what it looks like. But this is another cool way to look at it, because it, I don't know, it kind of helps you think about
how just what the forces really are going.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that obviously they have the old banking at Monza, but they don't really have anything like they do at Zandvoort now.
The closest that there was before was when in the US they used to race at Indy, and they used, you know, the first corner at Indy is the, well, on the Indy 500, when they go around anti-clockwise, F1 went clockwise, and so they'd use the first corner as the last corner, and that had banking. And that was the problem with the backing, was it 2005 with the six car race, where going around that banked corner, they go so fast that the tire was basically gripping the track on that last corner so much that the bond between the tire and the track was greater than the tire and itself.
Oh my God.
And the tires were just failing. Because the track surface is sort of grooved. It's got this diamond cut pattern in the which is fine for the IndyCar tires because they're harder and they're not as grippy. But it meant that the tire was just so stuck to the track that it tore the rubber from the carcass of the tire, the canvas. Yeah. You had, who crashed? I think Jarno Trulli crashed on Friday, and then maybe Ralf Schumacher crashed as well. And at that point, they wanted to put in a chicane to slow the cars down, but it needed to be unanimous amongst the teams. And the Bridgestone runners were like,
our
tires work fine. So then you had six cars, all the cars lined up on the grid. And then they went round on the parade lap and all the Michelin runners went into the pit, and only the six or eight cars that had the Bridgestone tires actually ran the race.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it was mental. I was at the race.
No way.
And people weren't happy. People
disappointed? Yeah, that's what I
heard. Yeah, people were throwing cans over the fence onto the track and stuff. Bad. It wasn't a good look for the US. No. And in the end, Michelin bought tickets. What did they do? They reimbursed you the ticket money. And then if you sent the check back as the payment for the next year's ticket, they gave you two more tickets free. So
did they have a race the next year?
A race the next year, and it was a decent one from what I remember. That was the one where Nick Heidfeld got flipped over on the first corner. If you ever saw that one, came into contact with Jenson Button and Juan Pablo Montoya, I think. And
JP.
Yeah. Yeah, so I took a buddy of mine, and we were in Indianapolis Airport in the bar. I think it was like a TGI Fridays in the airport. And who was sitting at the bar but Jenson Button?
Ooh.
So I went over and said hi and got my picture taken.
Awesome.
That was kind of cool.
I like Jenson Button. He seems like a cool guy.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I mean, I feel like they used to have the Indy 500 was kind of part of the F1 calendar, like back in the 50s and 60s, but it wasn't part of the championship, but they still raced in it.
Yeah, so the drivers would come over and race an IndyCar. Now it's the same weekend as the Monaco Grand Prix, so it's always on the same day, so they'll never really have much of a chance to do that.
Except for Fernando that one time.
Yeah, well, he wasn't in F1 at the time, right? So that was in his he took two years off F1.
He was. Remember, he skipped the Monaco Grand Prix, and Jenson Button filled in for him during the Monaco Grand Prix so that Fernando could go do the Indy 500 race.
Wow.
Like, I think it was Jensen's first season that he had retired. So he was just in McLaren that season before with Fernando. So he just jumped in Fernando's car.
Okay. All right. That's, my usually impeccable memory has been served.
The one and only time.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has to give up the corner. I had to nose ahead. What is wrong with these people?
Thanks for listening to the Undercuts review of the 2024 Dutch Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and join us next time for our review of the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. See you then.